Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all, someday.
Okay, may we have the roll call, please?
Good evening, Commissioners. I'll take the roll call. Chair Hartwig?
Present.
Vice Chair Hurd?
She is excused.
Commissioner Castillo?
Present.
Commissioner Griggs Murphy?
Present.
Commissioner Montgomery?
She is excused.
And Commissioner Jungley?
Present.
Thank you.
Excellent. Do we have a motion to approve last month's minutes?
I'll make that motion, Chair.
It's been moved.
I second.
Seconded. All those in favor, please say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Abstentions? Okay, good. Carries unanimously. Old or unfinished business, I believe that there is none.
There is none, correct.
modifications to the agenda. Let me see. I would suggest that we move people wanting to address the commission up to right now, because we only have one person and it's not addressing a specific line item. So if that's okay, Jacob Epstein.
And just speak into the mic, if you would.
Hello, commissioners. I had a couple of questions here. Would you like for me to read them all at once or one at a time?
We can't answer them, but you can read them.
Yeah, okay. We will not be able to answer them, so you might just read through your list.
My best?
Pardon? No, just read through the list of questions.
What do you see as a problem for the Making Transitions Work program this year? Do you see rental rates continuing to rise, or do you think that they will stabilize in 2017? Do you see the city of Oakland being able to build more housing to increase supply of housing? And do you see difference in housing problems between Oakland and neighboring cities like Berkeley? That was it.
Is that it? First, I want to thank you for coming and showing and asking questions and being interested on this. In the Brown Act rules, in terms of a public meeting, you can make comments, but the board can't answer you. So what we could do is, if you'd like to get me your questions in writing, I'd be happy to get you my thoughts on the matter,
okay,
along with the board. And I think that maybe you can get my email address. And if you just email me those tomorrow, I'll try, or give me a call.
All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yes, good. Thank you. Oh, yes, excuse me. We have one question from the board. Could you tell us, Jacob, could you tell us what organization you're affiliated with, or what, or are you by yourself, or?
Yes, I'm just by myself. This is for a school assignment. I wanted to get some more information.
Oh, okay, good. Thank you. That clarification really helps us a lot. Thank you.
Just contact my office tomorrow.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
And thank you for coming.
Yes. Okay, so moving on to new business, item A.
New business, item A is a consideration of a resolution authorizing the executive director to execute a contract with Okamoto Sajo Architecture in an amount not to exceed $891,700 to provide as-needed architect and engineering services to substantially rehabilitate the Oak Grove North and Oak Grove South public housing properties. This is an item that was included in the budget discussions. We're going to start our renovations, and the first step is to get some real A&E services in there. And I've asked Phil Neville, Deputy Executive Director, and Bridget Galka to come and give us a brief presentation of what we're doing and look at the building, and you can understand what the problem is, and we'll be back with more as the year goes on. Mm-hmm. Phil, Bridget?
Are we on the screen?
Yes.
Great. Good evening. I'm Bridget Galka. I work in the Office of Real Estate Development. I'm the Assistant Director.
And I'm Phil Neville, Deputy Executive Director in the same office.
And I wanted to point out that Eric Saijo from Okamoto Saijo Architects is in the audience tonight. Okay, so Oak Grove North and South are two pretty large buildings in downtown Oakland. One has 77 units and one has 75. Oops, how do I?
Let's see, I don't want to end the show.
Oh. Yeah, the back and forth keys will do it.
Oh, okay, back and forth.
The arrow keys?
This one.
Oh, we got to get that.
Well, yeah.
Okay, here we go. Good, thank you. So I've blocked out the two buildings on this aerial of downtown Oakland. You can see kind of next kitty corner to Oak Grove South is the ice rink, and that is San Pablo. So we're below just below San Pablo, very close to downtown Oakland, 16th and 17th. So Oak Grove North is on 17th Street. As you can see, it's a very large building. It's 4 and 5 stories high. There are 76 apartments and one office. These are senior buildings, so primarily one bedroom, but some two bedrooms. This building was completed in 1982, and there were significant structural repairs made in 1995 and through 1997. So the next building is 570 16th Street. It's the same era of building. First was 17th Street, and then came 16th Street. There was also structural repairs made to this building in 95 through 97, and the elevators were replaced in 2008. So those elevators are not part of this scope of work. And there are 75 apartments in this building. So there's a total of 157 apartments. 152 apartments. So the rehabilitation is really quite needed. We had a physical needs assessment done in 2015. And a comprehensive list of all the things that were identified in the physical needs assessment are in your board memo. But we're just going to go through some of the visuals in this presentation. So the roofs have never been replaced. So there are signs of wear, soft spots, and fungal growth. And when it rains, there's ponding, which is problematic. So the windows are old. They have never been replaced. They're single pane. And as part of the rehab, they will be replaced with energy-efficient units. The exterior stucco shows signs of potential water penetration, which may cause dry rot of the underlying wood framing. And so that's a big priority, the first step. Okamoto Saijo has included a general contractor in their scope of work who will be taking off some stucco on certain sections of the building so we can get a visual of the framing underneath. And then the balcony decks need to be investigated and either need to be repaired or replaced and waterproofed. So as you can see from this picture, the balcony railings are rotting, so that will need to be replaced. And then in some sections, the metal framing is coming apart from the exterior stucco. So those need to be replaced. And then interior, the older appliances, cabinets, and fixtures will need to be replaced. And you can also see this is the entry, and the entry system is old, and it needs to be replaced. In fact, one of the buildings, Chief Duplessis has assigned a security guard there all the time because the fire system is not working, and so they need to have somebody in place in case there is a fire. In addition, the security systems need to be upgraded. As you can see, the screens are outdated. So we put out an RFQ, and we're pleased with the response. We received 8 proposals from highly competitive firms with experience. We had an evaluation panel of very knowledgeable staff and people in the industry, and Okamoto Saijo Architecture's proposal was deemed to be the most responsive and received the highest score. So Okamoto Saijo is the lead architect on this team, and they brought with them their subcontractors, KPW Engineering, who, as part of the fee, has an allowance for a seismic retrofit design, but first they're going to do a structural analysis. So if there is no need for a seismic retrofit, then the allowance will not be used. ED Design C is the mechanical, electrical, and plumbing consultant, and WJE is going to be looking into the exterior stucco and the building envelope. And the landscape architect is Merrill Morris and Partners.
And Bridget, when you talk about the seismic retrofit, what you're actually talking about is the soft story issue on the first floor parking.
Right.
And we don't know the answer whether this is a soft story building or not, because it has hard walls, and that's an engineer needs to make the determination based on the city's proposed ordinance. We wanted to address that when we do the rehabilitation. So if it needs seismic work on that soft story, meaning the first floor is parking and then some community rooms, it also has hard walls, so we're not sure whether it meets that definition or not, but I'm sure you guys will let us know if what's needed. But we're looking to be in compliance with any proposed ordinance the city is considering regarding soft stories, meaning the parking, unsupported first story of a building.
Okay, so just so that I understand the technical of this. So a soft story would be something that does not have additional lateral supports, is that correct?
Yeah, it's tucked under parking. It's first floor parking, whether it's on stilts. It's a series of garages that don't have retaining walls in there. And for example, the building I'm on, they had to put I-beams, U-I-beams around every other garage to stabilize the first floor so that it doesn't collapse.
I see. Okay, good. Thank you.
So if the board approves this contract, Okamoto Saijo is ready to sign the contract as early as August, and then they would begin schematic designs, which are projected to be complete in October, and then the construction documents would be complete in April, and we would bid and negotiate with general contractor subs in May and hopefully start construction in June. If we do have to take the stucco off, it makes the most sense to follow the schedule, but this is quite an aggressive schedule. The two buildings would very likely have to be constructed separately, so each building would be undergoing the rehabilitation at different times, and we anticipate about a year construction schedule for each. And the contract includes construction administration for each building separately.
And part of that puzzle is to design a path of travel that has the least disruption to our seniors in the building, looking if we can do stacks of apartments together, relocating as few as we can, and then permanently moving them once instead of multiple times. And that kind of path is always a concern when we deal with our senior properties, particularly we don't like to relocate our seniors.
Traumatic.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the presentation.
The memorandum you have in front of you and the resolution, the staff report memo, does contain staff's recommendation to hire Okamoto Saijo as our architects and their team, as Bridget explained. And that particular contract, as she said at the top, is $891,700, and it does have a couple of deductions that are possible if we don't need, as Bridget explained, we don't need the seismic work, and if destructive testing is not needed. I might go back to one of the original points. You have also a copy of the memorandum from our Contract Compliance and General Services Division on the RFQ, or Request for Qualifications. We had a lot of competition. A number of very experienced firms stepped forward, and this particular firm
had done six other properties that were judged to be similar to ours, renovations. And they rose to the top and were scored highly by the panel. So we have strong recommendation that this is the best firm available to do this work.
Questions? Thank you. I'm glad to see that we're choosing these buildings to update, because I'm sure the seniors would really appreciate it. I'm looking at everything that we have planned to do. It looks like we're installing new flooring. Is that throughout?
Yes.
And are we also concentrating in the bedrooms, like everyone's going to get a new coat of paint? So it's almost like they're going to step into a fairly new apartment. Is that correct?
That is the goal.
That is the goal. Can you, one of the things that I see that's missing here, is there any upgrade to the technical infrastructure? Is one word that I could describe it like, are we going to be enhancing internet access for our folks just to think really current in the times? I know it's a lot of money, but this might be a good opportunity to have some access for internet for our folks. Is that?
That's a really good suggestion.
Yes.
It's currently cabled for Comcast.
Okay.
But we could look at other options while we're here, because this is the time to do it. You're
absolutely
right, Commissioner.
This would be the time to do it.
So we'll look at that, yeah, as we go forward.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Appreciate that. I know that they would be pleased to be able to have access to internet. Is there any work being done in the common areas, I believe?
Yes.
And what?
They'll have new carpet, new painting, and hopefully new furnishings.
In the common areas,
yes.
On the first floor. Excellent. That would be a great spot for a little lab for them, too.
Okay.
If we're thinking along the same lines. When will the community engagement process start? It looks like we're far out. It's June 2017, but it's probably better to start sooner than later once we get some really solid dates. And what would that look like?
Right. One of the reasons Okamoto Saijo rose to the top was because they did address resident engagement in their plan, and they have a good track record of meeting with the residents and also designing the rehab so that as less problematic for the residents as possible. So I would believe that during the schematic design phase would be when we're going to be meeting with the residents. So that's between August and October.
Okay,
so
this year, 2016?
Yes.
Okay.
One of the things you want to do is, you want to know what you're doing before you go talk to people about what you're doing so that they otherwise, it sounds like we just are a chaos.
Absolutely.
So we have to get an idea of what work we're doing, get an idea of the path of travel, get a good idea when we're starting. If we start next year, like we're proposing, the construction will go on. The other thing I'd mention is that we have, as you know, committed funds to do both these buildings in this year's budget that would roll into next year until it's done. But we wanted to make sure we had all the money assembled. It may be more, it may be less. The last thing I'm going to mention is this was part of one of our dispositions to convert it to project-based Section 8. And one of the comments back on our plan, because it's still in our plan every year, is HUD has asked that we please have the conversation with the Special Application Center to bring resolution one way to that. So we will be, coinciding with this, looking at doing that flip as well, if they would let us. We don't know what that'll be, but it won't change the project at all. It won't change the residents living there at all.
Good.
That we know. It could change our ability to finance the project, though, because right now we cannot do anything but use OHA funds. If we were to move it to project-based Section 8, we could actually do a bond or something to get some money into it. But we haven't considered that because HUD has said no and not allowing us.
Oh, okay.
So if that changes in the next year, you'll be the first to know.
Thank you so much. I'm not sure what the demographics are as in the buildings. Will the community engagement process be ready to engage in different languages?
Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Questions?
Yes. I didn't see anything in here about updating the emergency response systems. I've been through a couple of rehabs, and when they do, they pull cord.
Yeah, I know that. We've been
and
there.
So now they're
We've
doing
had that system
thing.
In this building very recently, as a matter of fact. I know.
So they're doing new ones that are a little bit more not as... Those are just archaic, and they're not working as well.
Yeah, we've removed them. We don't have them anymore.
Oh, you don't have them there. Okay.
But we'll,
so you didn't even know that.
I don't know what system we have in Oak Groves, if there is even one. Yeah, it's capped. It's just removed. So we haven't replaced it.
Okay. Is that something you'd be considering doing?
You know, it would be interesting to look into it if you... Yes, but we always, when we're looking at capping it, Patricia Wells looked at that, looked at also the notification ones, like the life alert ones. Is there one that worked in a building? And there may be another wireless system that works better. And it would be worth looking into. Yeah.
I think both buildings are fully occupied. So my question is, what are the plans and where would seniors be moved if they need to be moved out of their units during renovation?
Well, we're first hoping to find a strategy as far as how long are we going to have to be in each unit, and just trying to figure out the least disruptive way. So we have not engaged a relocation consultant as of yet.
But we will, based on what it's needed. And did we use any of those infrared pictures we had?
I did not include any of that.
We've done some infrared imaging just to look at what's behind the stucco that shows where the water intrusion is. The question is, can we get to that from the balcony and from outside without disrupting the tenant, which would be the preference? If we have to go inside, then there may be certain areas of the building that are more impacted. If we're going to do upgrades and there's system upgrades, that the way buildings are built, the systems are stacked, bathrooms, kitchens. So we try and do it in to the greatest extent possible, the stack, so we only have to relocate four people or five, depending on how high the stack is, and then move folks around. And those are all unknowns until we get this bit of work done. And then we can actually come back and give you a sort of more detailed report of what our path of travel is, how it's going to work, and also get in front of the residents and get their input and give them some real solid answers to what we need to do. But we don't know yet. That's why we're doing the destructive testing and see what the real extent is.
I don't think there was enough space out there up on top at the roof, but as we redesign the roof and strengthen it, will there be like a open space for seniors to be at?
They're probably not on the roof. It structurally
something.
It won't work. There is
it
court. There are courtyards though in
they
both
do
buildings.
Okay,
yeah.
Good. I'll move the item, Chair, if you're okay.
Okay, well, I have a
question
that I'd like to ask first. Okay. So this is coming out to, when all said and done, this was, if my memory's right, this is about $16 million renovation. So now, how long will that extend the useful life of the building? Because now part of this question is that I looked at that and was like, wow, the thing was built in 1982. That's not that long ago. And then in 95, it needed a fairly substantial work. Now we're doing another big rehab. I mean, are there any fundamental issues with this building that may carry on as a liability going forward? Or once this $16 million is spent, are we good to go for, you know, how long?
Well, just to start with, 35 years is a long time when you've done nothing to a building because it's been in public housing. So it hasn't had the kind of maintenance it should have had.
That is a good point, yes.
And what we're hoping with this is we're going to get another good run of 30 years or so out of the property and its infrastructure. We've done the elevators, but the key to that and why still that conversion over to project base and getting income into the property is important is you got to maintain the property.
Yes.
The way we go about approaching these in the public housing side historically has been you don't touch anything except for once every whenever you rebuild it. You can't do it that way. You have to maintain a property. You have to have it operating, and you have to have a reserve account to take care of the capital needs of a property over the term of its life, or you end up where we are now, where although in the public housing world this is an immaculate property in many ways, it's not, because we know there's issues with it. And that's what we're learning we're going to discover how much. So what I guess my answer is, if we never put another dime in it, we're going to be back here sooner rather than later. But if we actually maintain it and we budget it correctly and we can get income regularly into the property and build its capital reserves, then you really prolong the life of the entire system of the building, and you can be here 30 years from now until you do another major rehabilitation. You'll do gradual kitchen upgrades. When units are vacant, you'll do, you know, unit upgrades that are cosmetic, but you won't be in the case where we are, where we're correcting water intrusion, dry rot, you know, sagging rails, and in more recently that we took care of, three of them were the elevators, which were a mess. It had never really been taken care of properly. So that gets to preventive maintenance and having a decent capital improvement plan. Did I clear that up or just make
no,
it clear?
That actually did pretty much hit the nail right on the head, yeah. Because I mean that is the problem with public housing all mm-hmm. along.
And you can, and they won't
sad.
Even let you put
it's
a
really
capital reserve account
we
on.
We weren't able to dispose of every single one of our public housing sites and turn them all
into Section 8.
Yeah, because then you have enough money to actually take care of stuff. And if you don't perform maintenance, you are going to go down.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I just think in a simple, stupid way, like my house was built in 1906.
Mm-hmm. And still looking
fine.
Good because you're taking
fine.
Care of
it's
it.
It's totally fine. I mean, the house is rock solid.
Well, I might suggest that in 1906 they had better construction standards than they do in 1980.
Wow. You know, I used to think that, but I am no longer so convinced that the old days were really the good days. Mm-hmm. See, I think in some ways they were, but in some ways, they're not. It's kind of a mixture.
But your 2x4s are 2 inches by...
That's right. My 2x4s are absolute 2x4s. And
probably
all,
redwood, right?
And they're all redwood.
Yeah.
The whole house is redwood. Yeah, right.
And lath and plaster.
Okay, cool.
All right.
So that is that was my only question. Because, I just make a comment now. See, this is the kind of thing that I've been talking about for a while, about rehabbing buildings. Now, here we happen to own the building. But if I'm able to divide correctly, this came out to just a shade over $100,000
yep.
a unit.
About 102, yeah.
Yeah, so we go from something that's kind of not so cool to something that is very cool for $100,000 a door.
Yeah. And it could go up a little, could go down. We'll know at the
end
of this exercise.
But when you look at modern construction costs per door,
$350.
Yeah, $350 to $400.
Yep.
This is a significantly interesting way to go for me, and that's why we've talked a little bit about, hey, can we find other cool buildings in Oakland that maybe we could mm-hmm. you know.
And these are great locations. This is a really great place to live.
These are super locations.
Yep.
These are some of the best locations in the city. That
oh yeah,
is
to
just,
transit
this
to,
is way
to life, to eating,
real estate.
To, it's yeah. great. And if they would open a market downtown, life would be wonderful.
Okay, well, the item has been moved.
Oh, officially.
I'll second.
Yes.
Second?
I'm moving the item officially.
Yeah.
And it has been seconded. All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Any abstentions? It's unanimous. We're going to fix the building.
Thank
Great.
You,
thank you. Moving on, item number B is a consideration of a resolution authorizing the executive director to exercise the second one-year option with Cypress Mandela Training Center for pre-apprenticeship construction training services for the for Housing Authority residents in an amount not to exceed $125,000. This item occurs annually. It has for several years. And it's an essential link in terms of having our residents available to work on our construction sites. And we don't really have a further presentation, but we're here for any questions. And Lenita Wheeler's here as well.
I'm ready to move this item, Chair.
Second.
Thank you.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstentions. Carries unanimously.
Thank you. And all the participants this year, thank you as well. Moving on, item number C. Item C is consideration of a resolution authorizing the executive director to annually renew a letter of understanding between the authority and the Building and Construction Trades Council of Alameda County for the use of direct hire union hall workers at Housing Authority owned and managed properties. I have a brief presentation. Unfortunately, Mr. Bailey is out ill today, so I'm going to pitch hit his presentation. And what we wanted to do, you know this program, what we looked at during the course of some discussions, Patricia Well had pulled the contract and realized it was renewing annually, and we gave a period that it was going to come back, and we hadn't come back in the past 6 months, so we're coming back now just to get permission for it to continue renewing annually. But I wanted you to see the pictures. Do you have the... Oh, I'm going to step down. So what I wanted to show you is some of the work that that the Forest Accounts have been able to do, because I know you hear about it and you see it in the reports, but I don't think you often have seen the before and afters in some of the projects. If you remember, we originally did this MOU related to ARA work that was to rebuild and restore Palo Vista Gardens. So if you've been to Palo Vista, you know the work that they did. That was the first project. And as things work out, it was our biggest project, and we did it first, and we probably should have started smaller, but we sure did learn, and they did a really good job. Where are we? This is it? Okay. Yeah, I got it. All right, so this is Forest Account work, and these are some of the properties. If you look at, you can see a picture of Palo Vista and a couple of other the redos you may recognize. Oh, it's not on the screen? Okay. You got it? All right. The Forest Account work, and we'll match you, walk you through, some of the...
that's a nice slide.
I don't know what I'm doing here. This is why you should never have the executive director do a presentation. All right. Palo Vista. Palo Vista was originally built in 1962. The site has six different buildings. Two of them are elevator buildings, and we're fixing the second elevator with the most recent approval you gave this year. And it's 101-bedroom units. It has a wonderful social hall. They serve lunch there every day. It's one of our great communities. I always like to stop by around lunch and say hello to people, and we encourage you to do the same. You know a lot of them, and they're really sweet, wonderful people. On the left is what it looked like before, including the grass, which was always more like a swamp because it didn't drain correctly. And the right is the rose garden and the regrading that we were able to do with Forest Account, and we were able to actually solve the drainage problems on this whole lot. And we did it through some very intelligent on-site work and leveling rather than elaborate plans. And it worked much better than many of the solutions that have been proposed and done over the life of this property to try and solve the problem. This is us regrading and making the drainage actually work in a big way. We preserved the barbecue pits, some of the outside and the planting. And if you've been out there recently, you know the plants are now gigantic compared to when these pictures were taken, which is right after it opened. We put in the gazebo. It's an aerial. Really good work, really lasted work. The interior of the units were all redone. And I would just tell sort of an anecdotal comment on how we came up with the interior finishes. We gave unit number 18 out there to some of our skilled trades because they said, you know, we could make these units look so much better really with very little extra money. So we gave them unit number 18 when it was vacant, and they redid it and put in the wainscoting and the molding for almost nothing and changed out some of the doors, and the units are just look great now. They took out this little divider wall with the kitchen and opened the whole place up, and that's what we ended up doing to all the units with Forest Account.
Very cool.
This property is at 1737 East 15th Street, and again, it was a complete rehab of the entire property. It was 6 two-bedroom units. These were ones that we had converted. There were 3-bedroom units, but they were very small and dysfunctional, so we were able to create 2-bedroom units that have bifolds that give more space for the children to separate from the living room so they can study, and they have desks, and they don't have to, you know, the bedrooms can be so small you can't get dressers and beds in, let alone get a place to study.
So just to clarify, that was 6 three-bedroom units, right, that were converted to two?
Yeah, I'm not sure if they were all 3-bedroom, but I know we converted them to 2-bedrooms. And the actual count, yeah.
Right.
Not all units lend themselves to the conversion, but when they do, in the OP portfolio, we're trying to convert them because we think it's a healthier environment. We'll have healthier and saner families when we do that. So this is what it looked like. It's at 18th and 15th Street, and kind of exposed, been there. Some work has started to go, but that's what it looked like. These are the the workers who are doing the exterior. They're fixing, waterproofing the exterior, replacing the windows, new doors, fixing the grading, doing the new concrete, and putting up new fencing on the outside. And that's what it looks like now.
Nice.
I don't know how many interior shots William was able to include in this, but we will see. Huge difference. The reaction for the neighborhood, it was just lifted the whole neighborhood, I have to tell you. And the neighborhood, it helps spur other people because you start raising the bar and neighborhoods do it. And what you look at it, they did things like they put the small, short fence, which only keeps people from walking across the property and really over our landscaping. But it also really is a terrific, I think, just looks good. And it keeps the landscaping in place. We also have been able to move families in. We did have one officer live here for a while. You know, we try and have one of our officers live in each one of our amps, and one was living here. I'm not sure if they still are in one of the units. And we did that mainly because this was a real high-impact corner in terms of a lot of underground economies, for lack of a better phrase. So we wanted to try and really take over the corner and when we rehouse the property, and one of our officers moved in and helped us do that. Stabilizing the neighborhood, improving the neighborhood was kind of the goal. This is 2558 35th Avenue. 35th Avenue, a very busy street. I think we need to all advocate to try and get some traffic calming going on. Andreas Manriquez and I have been talking about that along Bancroft Avenue and also Seminary, but 35th would definitely be on that list as well. It was built in 1968. It's one building, has 12 units. There are 9 3-bedrooms, two 4-bedrooms, and 1 5-bedroom, so it has a large bedroom mix. With this one, but I love the site because you go up a little bit from 35th and you get the parking and then you walk back and it's got this great courtyard. But the courtyard was really not aesthetically a good place to be, so we wanted to really fix that. We also had a lot of abatement work, so we had asbestos abatement contractor went in ahead of us and took out all the drywall and cleaned it up. And there was a point when it was all sticks inside and you could see all the way through the building, and it was... And I kept thinking how we could reconfigure it, and then everybody told me to leave, so I, because it's too expensive. But a lot of really, this was a gut rehab. We gutted this down to the studs. We put everything, all the new windows and exterior on. This gives you an idea what we did to the courtyard from the left to the right, including a little seating area and things that we added. This is the exterior now. If you look, we added, see those little pieces the that look like they're supporting the overhang on the roof?
Oh,
they're
yeah.
only ornamental. And Jeff Mangy, who is retired now, is the one who actually came up with some of these ideas to give it sort of a more emission sort of sense and give it some quality. And then we made the private patios so people had some degree of privacy on their exterior patios on the front. And this is the parking lot you drive up from 35th, a little hill kind of to get to.
Before you leave there, Director, did we leave it at the same bedroom sizes?
We did.
Okay.
We did. It was a building that couldn't be reconfigured easily. When we were trying to change some of that, we want one bedroom kind of right off the living room that we put a bifold in so you get more living space.
Okay.
This one was designed differently. There was a weird hallway, and there was just no way to do it. So we weren't able to do it.
Did we find a family for the 5-bedroom?
I believe we have. Yeah. 2110 25th Avenue, again, another big rehab, built in 1971. It's 6 3-bedroom units, and another full rehab. This one had a fire in it, is how it came into force accounts. There was a fire in the upper unit on the far right-hand side of the picture. And so we were able to move very quickly. So rather than have to then assess it, relocate everybody, bid out what we're going to do, award the contract, have the contractor start, go through the change order process. We're actually able to start very rapidly with this property. And this is what it looks like now. Again, we've added those braces, which are ornamental, but I think make a world of difference. We improved the street lighting, and we improved also the front fence. I wonder if you can see, it was graded very strangely, and we're able to open it up. And that's really working with the chief and his septhead to make the property safer and more visible from the street. This is the backyard, which was kind of wasted space. We turned it into a small sitting space where people can go back and not be on the street, but actually have the kids back in the back where they're off the street and not in as much danger of getting into traffic and things. And I think this is, to the right, actually a laundry room as well that you can see. 1639 84th Avenue, the exterior, was built in 1969 because this is one building. It's 4 3-bedroom units. And this is where we're going in. We had exterior problems, not dissimilar to some of the exterior that we're dealing with the Oak Groves, just on a much smaller scale so we can handle it. It's only two stories, and we can handle the crew. But you have before and after on the left. And what you can look here again, what we did is a septed exercise of trying to remove some of the barriers so you can see the stairs. So if you look on the left, it was built places where people can hide. On the right, you can't hide. This is the courtyard area and the new fences and courtyards that we put into the units. And also in the back, that's where we put our trash cans so that they're not visible from the street and they can be pulled out. 676 Fairmont Avenue, it's a fire renovation. It was built in 1968, consists of one two-story building and 6 three-bedroom units. This is the fire. So you can see it looks, a lot of that soot, to be honest with you, but it still looks pretty bad. They always do. So this is where we had to go in and abate all of that and start cleaning it up, including the cabinets. And this is painting of the cabinets and restoration of the kitchen. And note the flooring. You can just see some of the interior finishes that we use now in terms of the sinks and the countertops and also the cabinets. This is the flooring and the molding. I told you we started doing molding. It makes a huge difference, I think, in the whole way it looks. We've dialed back some of the molding. We don't do the crown like we originally did because we've got more cost effective. But just having baseboards and having the baseboards be lightly, you know, a white on a beige really, I think, makes it look good. The doors are great. The finish on the hardware is great. If you notice, we even put in the handles that are the correct handles that you can just spin down rather than turn. 1900 Commerce Way. This is patio window deck replacement built in 1969. It consists of a two-story building, 6 three-bedroom units, and this is what was going on there. So this is when we pulled off. You can see the walkway. So dry rot is such a challenge here. When you have water intrusion in a very moist climate, it can just get out of control. So we went in and started rebuilding that, relaying the concrete. This is the finished work with the new deck, safe rail, Fairfax Avenue. And this is, by the way, something that, you know, management discovered and they've ripped it up. But the fact that we can, again, and this has happened at several places in town I know of, that we've been able to go in right away as soon as we get identified from the manager or the resident to then secure the balcony and go in very quickly and start work and getting it restored so that resident isn't sitting there waiting years for us to get to their balcony. And that's one of the real advantages of having an internal construction crew. 4516 Fairfax Avenue, built in 1972, consists of a two-story building with 4 bedroom units. Second floor units are accessed via an exterior staircase. And you can look in terms of, these are our neighbors' fences, and this was quite an ordeal for management because we're trying to get through HQS. These are project-based Section 8 units. And this was creating a hazard, and we were getting into abatement. So Forest Account finally was able to go in and find a way, after looking at it several different ways that were costing too much money, we were able to shore it up at a more reasonable cost and make it cleaner, change some of the concrete on our side to build the retaining wall that will last and the fence up above without and preserving and not replacing the neighbor's fence when it wasn't our responsibility and they weren't willing necessarily to do it. They also did some work in Lockwood Gardens. This was in the main building of Lockwood, or what we call our East District office. There was some water intrusion and some things we had to take care of. This is in one of the bathrooms and the social hall, so they were able to get in, pull it off, change the plumbing and electricity. 1430 Seminary Avenue was built in 1975. It has 10 two-bedroom units. This is before. One of the things that has always bothered me about this one is that green trash bin, which only makes everybody want to dump. I don't believe we fixed it, but what we were able to do is right after we identified one of these stairwells were rotting, we constructed the temporary one you see, and we're able to start restoration of the other one. And this is them painting the building. So they're using cherry picker to get up around the building and paint it. And I guess my point was, I wanted to see how elaborate the construction company is. It isn't doing light things. We're doing major, heavy capital improvements with this crew. And this property, Elizabeth Street, it's 5730 Elizabeth Street, is going to become the new, where the moms program is going to be, but we're calling it Parents and Children Together. It's going to be mixed with the Sheriff's Department. And as soon as William finishes this, we'll be locating them from Seminary around the corner onto Elizabeth Street. It was built in 1962. It has 20 units, has 13 two-bedroom units and 7 three-bedroom units. And that's very important for the program because it has different size. Not only is it doubling the number of units that we currently have, but it's also changing the mix to something that better meets the family. Now, how this came about, this was a couple years ago we did the money for this. I think not this budget year, but the previous one. And we had dry rot in these stairs, and the property had been redone, but they had a real significant dry rot, and the stairs needed to be redone, and we had to relocate people because the only way you can get to each unit is each individual staircase. There isn't a master one, so we realized we were going to have to relocate people to do this, and so we were going to have the vacant building, and that's when we decided maybe then we would have the mom's program move in because it was going to have to be released. We were able to relocate everyone. It did take a while to get everyone situated, but we were able to start construction and rebuilding. This is, again, them rebuilding it. Notice opening up the stairwells, making sure their lines of sight. Not only does it allow for dry rot not to be there because, one, they're metal, but secondly, they can breathe. But secondly, you can see through it. So it's a septet issue. When you're walking through the property now, there's it's much safer. The police can see people who are hiding. There's not as many hiding spaces. So this is going to be back online, we think, by the end of September, early October, and we'll be housing it with our new Moms and Dads program called PAC. And now we're at 1619 Harrison. This was just another small example of some of the work they do. The trash chute had been damaged, and we had to replace sections of it. So we were able to use Force Account to get some work done. We're grateful to find a solution to it. It would make the building smell on the first two floors if it backed up. And Andres Manriquez was able to figure out what was going on and then get Force Account in. And we were able to get the chute actually fabricated by some metal workshop in Berkeley and start putting it in. And then we were pressure washing everything and cleaning up the garage. So that's the new chute that's in the walls over here. And you can see the crews crawling up to install it floor by floor. So what's coming up this year? We have two main properties that we're starting restoration of, and I just wanted you to be aware of both of them. It's 1242 95th Avenue and 2425 94th Avenue. Just remember 94th and 95th. They're both getting worked on. They both have been boarded up, and we want to restore them. They're part of OPI. So Force Account has already done the roofs, actually, in preparation, and they've embedded 94th, and so it's ready to go. And they'll be starting that work in the next few months and getting the interiors restored and getting those units back online. Just to remind you, 94th Avenue actually was a state property. It has no affordability on it. It's what we call the sixplex, State 6, turned over a long time ago. So we'll be leasing those to Section 8 Housing Choice Voucher families that are out searching. And 95th Avenue is a project-based Section 8, so we'll fill that with the people on the project-based wait list. And that's the end of our report for the Force Account, but we're here for any questions.
Sure. Director, I so appreciate the photos, because being able to see our buildings like that, thank you so much for bringing that to us, because I miss out when you're just hearing addresses, you just don't get it, but the pictures bring it home. So thank you for that, because that's a lot of work. Mm-hmm. I also was curious, the properties that you shared, that work was done over a large amount of time, 5 years, 1 year?
The first project we did was Palo Vista. That started in 2010. I think it took us about 18 months to finish everything. Mm-hmm. Then we started the other projects.
Okay.
So I'm not sure all the years beyond. So Elizabeth has taken about a year now.
Okay. So I'm looking at like the last 7 years or something like that.
That's too long. You're going too far back. Long. Probably this was 5 years of work.
Well, that's very impressive.
And these are only the projects we chose. There are a bunch of little projects all over town.
Well, congratulations. That's fabulous work.
I was surprised when we ran up the numbers to see how many people we'd been able to hire. It's 201 is a lot of people. So we've had 201 people from various trades work for us as a construction company over the years, and I think that's really a valuable employment resource for our Section 3 people, but also just for the hiring hall.
And those are City of Oakland residents?
City. They're all in the county and a certain number of the city, and I can't remember the total number. 44% live in Oakland, and 100% live in Alameda County.
Okay, very good. Right. Thank you.
Yes.
The pictures are very they're wonderful. It's great to see the transformation that you're doing with the workforce. So if I understand this letter of agreement correctly, It's so that we can hire directly and not go through a general contractor.
Yes, so we are the direct, we hire like a construction company. We call the hall and they send people out. And then they, and they're per diem. They get all of their benefits, including retirement, get paid through the hiring hall and their rate. So they're separate than from the MOU employees. We have skilled trades on our MOU that are permanent employees. These are not. They're temporary employees. They work like they do every other construction site. If we need 16 painters that day, we hire 16 painters. And then when we're done, they all go back to the hall.
Does one of our staff, such as Mr. Bailey, mm-hmm. have a general contractor's license?
That's a very interesting question because we do it in-house, we don't need that.
Okay.
And I'm not sure if we have several people who oversee the different crews.
Uh-huh.
In fact, Gary New's here.
Oh, okay.
And Gary does have there you have that. Thank you, Gary.
I good work. And I think that it's great that you can be efficient about costs by using mm-hmm. by hiring directly, but I also think it's a challenge for you that you are getting new people each time. So,
and we have people who come back.
I appreciate your supervision on that.
Yeah, and we have people that we keep. We also have people that leave us and come back over again. They get
okay.
the call. So,
all right, great.
They're not always the new people. And Gary has his list of the people he I think likes better on the cruise
uh-huh.
than
Good.
Others.
Great,
yeah.
Thanks. And final question. Mm-hmm. I noticed that many of these were some of the smaller buildings that are scattered throughout mm-hmm. the various neighborhoods. So I'm just curious about the reaction of the neighborhood groups. I'm sure they must be delighted with the changes.
You know, I think to an extent they enjoyed the changes. They really were reactive when we did the building envelope program, and we painted and we changed the fences. The exterior made a big difference. The problem with that is we didn't touch the systems and interior. So we still have a lot of work to do inside those and keeping those up and making sure we have our roof program now. It's been going on for 8 years, 10 years of a roof schedule that we routinely now have for all the properties. But there's also painting, just taking care of it and making sure that we change the trash areas, and we've done that. That got the bigger reaction from everyone in town. This is now taking some problem properties and completely redoing them. And when you do things like the 15th Street, really change that neighborhood. The one that was coming down the side and we had to redo the grading, and it had the fire on the end unit. That one, when it got the fire, literally within days, people were calling us, like, what are you going to do? Can you do something? And we had already decided to put force account. Had we not done that, it would have taken us a year to get contractors on that site. So it was really, the neighborhood, when they saw us started working, were really shocked it was so quickly. Because it was quicker than most of our neighbors, because we have the internal contractor. Our problem is we get caught up in that bidding cycle, the HUD procurement,
yeah.
And then we get caught up in change orders. And before you know it, between the change orders and the profit margin, you're paying a lot more than if we just did it ourselves with our own crews.
Great. Well, great job. Thank you for being here. And
that actually segued right into a question I had. I just wanted to understand what the mechanism is for money savings on change orders.
Well, because we don't have to do change orders. We don't get charged for change orders. If we change, the only thing we're paying is actually the time and materials. But change orders is where contractors actually really can gouge you with additional costs. And when you don't have to pay those costs, instead you say along the line, we decide we want to use this sink instead of that sink. We just get that sink and put it in, and we don't have a change order with the vendor.
So you mean what happens if you hire a contractor is if you want to change something, then they basically just charge you fees for that.
Yes, and the other problem you have is when they open up a wall and they realize the extent of damage was greater than what it was described or bid upon. Like if you have X number of feet of dry rot will be removed and ends up three times that amount, then you have to have a change order to accomplish that. And the cost is going to be far more than if you just did it yourself, because they're going to make a profit off the change order.
That's most interesting. Yes. Well, that was, oh, I just had one other question aside from that. I noticed that as part of this, this might sound kind of silly, but as I was looking at this, I saw that drug testing section, and it occurred to me that one of the drugs in there, marijuana, is now kind of pretty much legal to anybody that wants to make it legal.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just wondering if there, I mean, are there any issues?
We haven't, this? And I don't know, I have not encountered any. Flo, do you have we ever encountered any issue with a force account and substance abuse? Issues, period, but nothing related to maybe marijuana and testing positive or anything that we know of. Yeah, no, we have not. In 5 years, we haven't ever used that clause. That's pretty historic.
I'm just looking at the regulatory environment changing, and I'm like, did we miss out? Did we miss that or what? You know, and the other thing is you don't want to deny somebody a job if they're really fundamentally okay. You know, so it's. Okay, that answers my question.
But the one thing I would say also about the per diem and the force account, if somebody really isn't performing, you call the union and tell them why, and you send them back
and
to the hall.
And they can go right back. Yeah.
And that could be why we've never actually used that clause, is because if someone wasn't performing, they may just be ended because of that.
Cool.
All right.
Do we have a motion on this?
I so move to approve.
Yep. I'll second.
Moved, seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Unanimous. Awesome.
Thank you, commissioners. Moving on, we are on item D. Item D is consideration of a resolution authorizing the executive director to execute a one-year contract with Civicore Schools in the amount not to exceed $254,000 for resident intern program services. And I'm asked Andreas Manriquez, our chief operating officer, and Lenita Wheeler, our director of family and community partnerships, to give us a brief presentation on this program because we had time on the agenda and I thought you'd like to hear what we're doing with Civicore because we've been doing it for about 3 years now. I'll turn it over to you guys.
Good evening, commissioners. So I'm going to turn it over to Lenita. I'm Andres Manriquez, Chief Operating Officer, and she'll put a presentation for Civic, you know, Corps Schools, which is a nonprofit organization.
Good evening, all. Lenita Wheeler, again, Director of Family and Community Partnerships. Tonight I'll be reviewing with you our Civicore internship program. We've been partnering with them since 2012. The Civicore program supports individuals who are between the ages of 18 and 26 with gaining skills to become employable. The young people will apply, have an application process, submit identification, verification information. They'll also go through fingerprinting and criminal background screen, orientation. They're required for their first 16 weeks when they enter into the program to go over some basic readiness and life skills. Civicore has been operating over 3 decades. Supporting young individuals with getting their GED, high school diploma, moving on to college, and for many of them, their first time having the opportunity to be in the workforce, developing regular habits, establishing a network, and getting basic skills around being in an office environment. They offer 2 major programs, recycling and environmental training. However, those are not the only opportunities where the core members can participate. For example, they're placed here at Oakland Housing Authority, where they'll receive various skills depending upon the department that they're placed in. The core members work full-time. They're required to attend at least 1 class per semester while they're enrolled in the program. They're currently earning a minimum wage at $12.55 per hour. Throughout the year, they're able to earn up to $26,000. They receive holiday time as well as sick time. And the holiday time schedule is dependent upon the agency where they're placed. And they will follow that agency's schedule. They're also able to receive up to $1,400 in education award through the AmeriCorps program, which they can apply towards any of their education expenses that they so desire and choose. They sign an internship agreement, and the Civil Corps program is pretty rigid in what they're requiring of these young people. They will also participate, most of them prior to graduation, in a financial wellness class offered in partnership with Charles Schwab over basic financial literacy, understanding their taxes, reading their paychecks, a number of items that they need to be fiscally sound, as well as becoming banked if they're not already banked. While they're placed at their agency, they receive monthly evaluations to check on their progress and how they're doing. While they're doing real work, it is still a training and education program. In that monthly evaluation is the CiviCorps program manager, the intern, and the supervisor of the agency where they're placed. Here at the Housing Authority, four departments currently are hosting CiviCorps core members: CCGS, Finance, Leased Housing, and Family and Community Partnerships. The numbers on the screen are sharing with you how many interns have been at those departments throughout the years. Within one contract year, there's one placed at CCGS, one placed at Family and Community Partnerships, and there are two placed at the Leased Housing Department and the Finance Department. The core member contract term is for 1 year, and it's possible for one of our departments to have more than one core members within a year, depending upon when they graduate from CiviCorps, if they move on to receive employment full-time at someplace else, or a number of reasons and why they may choose to end their term with us. As I stated before, they do real work with us. Depending upon the department in which they're placed, they've supported finance department with their audits, the CCGS department with bid conferences and pre-construction meetings. They have supported the Family and Community Partnerships department with our various programs, receiving, greeting residents, assisting with family self-sufficiency. We also have a case management database within the Family and Community Partnerships department, where interns placed with us are taught how to use and to complete some basic clerical and data entry for us in that department. These are just some highlights of individuals over the last 2 to 3 years who've had wonderful successes while partnering, while being placed here at the Housing Authority. A core member from the CCGS department is now a regular staff person with our Office of Property Operations here at OHA. And finance has recently secured a new core member because a previous one received a full-time employment with benefits while they're continuing to go to school. A CiviCorps is very successful. 75% of their participants graduate, and 75% of them within 1 year of enrolling in college become employed at completion. I am more than happy to entertain any questions that you may have about our CiviCorps program.
I just want to comment that it's a great program. I wonder, do you track the participants after they complete their year for more than a year, just so we get a sense of their ability to keep moving on?
We don't, but I think we can find out from CiviCorps. I've gone to one of their graduations over the years because they wanted me to. It was kind of inspirational to go to, because you realize the struggles that they overcame to get there to graduation, and how much working, and every person who commented how important it was to work and get paid, and how that kept them focused on getting through high school, getting to graduation, and how many of them ended up working in the areas that they were interning in during the program. But we can get you that, because I'm sure that CiviCorps would be very proud to share the outcomes. Yeah.
I do want to make a correction. I stated that our Civic Corps members are making minimum wage. I'm mistaken. The Civic Corps program actually ensures that they receive at least 50 cents above over minimum wage. So our Corps members are currently receiving $13.05 per hour.
You're welcome.
I'll just also ditto Commissioner Lynette stating it's a wonderful program. Thank you so much for participating in it.
Yes.
And with that said, let's move the item. Thank you.
I'll second.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor, please say aye. All those opposed? Abstentions? Carries unanimously.
Great. Thank you, Commissioner.
I can't talk tonight. Carries unanimously. And I would like to say, Eric, you are absolutely right. I really appreciate this presentation because, you know, I did not know much about the Civic Corps before this, and so now I really know what it does. And you're all right. It's really a cool thing.
It is. It's a correct.
And now we know it's a cool thing.
It allows folks to correct where they are in life and set them forward into a different path. And it's amazing to hear the graduates talk, I will say. I was impressed. Thank you both.
Thank you, Commissioners.
Yeah, indeed. Okay.
Item E, our final item, consideration of a resolution approving the Oakland Housing Authority's continued participation in the Employment Risk Management Authority, IRMA, as an individual member and continuing to sit on the board of directors, and authorizes the executive director to make the annual premium payment of $129,190 for employment practices liability and excess liability insurance coverage for fiscal year 2016-2017. That's a long title, Ms. Dupree. I would like to welcome our risk manager, Artesia Dupree, who's being joined by Flo Lewis, our HR director. And I'd ask them actually just to explain a little bit about IRMA so we all understand it, because it's something that we benefit from in this agency and we're a part of. And I guess you'll let them know our dividend?
Yes.
Okay.
Good evening, Commissioners. I'm Artesia Dupree, and I have been the risk manager for 12 years. Things to say. We have been a part of IRMA since 2000. We actually were part of IRMA through another group called CHARMA. CHARMA disbanded in 2007, but because the relationship was so good with IRMA, Oakland Housing Authority continued as a direct member. By that relationship, we are actually granted some wonderful benefits. We actually sit on the board of directors for IRMA, and we have one voting position, which Ms. Lewis is the person who does our voting. I'm the alternate. One of the benefits is they keep us out of trouble when it comes to our prevention of sexual harassment and discrimination. Part of the benefit that they provide for us is they do compliance training. We are required by the state of California to do the AB 1825 training, which is the prevention of sexual harassment, which also includes a bullying component. So we are required to do that every 2 years. So 100% of our staff, from maintenance all the way up to the executive board, they go through that training. It's just a good way of letting people know what the work culture is and what you're allowed to do and what you're not allowed to do. And if you don't want to hear from Ms. Lewis, this is what you don't do. So it's a wonderful program. They also have a lot of good training. In addition to that, they have how to deal with different cultures. All of us now work in a multi-generational environment, and how do you manage that when you have younger people who are just new to the work world, and how we all work together to keep the wheels rolling. So I think a lot of the classes are really wonderful in providing that. But our relationship with them is also to make sure that we're covered when it comes to if we, in the event, have a discrimination or harassment lawsuit. The benefit of not having a lot of those is we derive dividends from them. One of the dividends that we got this year was for $27,513, and that was from some program years. We were funded at a 90% confidence rate, meaning that they had confidence and we set the reserves, that we wouldn't go beyond the reserves when it came to dealing with a lot of our cases. So I think that receiving $27,000 is a kudo for Oakland Housing Authority, meaning that HR is able to really handle a lot of our complaints. Don't get many, but we do a good job managing those and keeping everybody in the right position where they should be. We have an open door policy, of course. If you have an issue, you can come in and you can talk, and we hopefully will be able to resolve the issue for you. The other benefit that IRMA has for us is that we get to go to conferences, that we are able to glean a lot of good information to bring back to the agency that really keeps us in a position. For an agency as large as we are, we don't get a lot of complaints. And they say that we do a really good job in managing those complaints.
Hi, I'm Florice Lewis, HR director. Also, one of the great benefits that I get from IRMA is that advice that we get legal when we do get complaints, because we do get some of discrimination, sometimes harassment, you know, hostile work environment, you know, all those keywords that are out there in the world today. And IRMA do give us very good advice on how to handle those cases, which ones we should try to handle in-house and which one needs to be litigated. We have a litigation manager that actually gives us all the advice we need on how to handle those cases, because I am not an attorney, and I'm so sorry we don't have a PowerPoint presentation like everybody else. We're going to have one next time. But they're really good as far as giving us advice on how to handle situations, especially when there's a legal component to it and a liability and risk that could cause us a lot of money. So that's where I really get my strength from, and my position is dealing with IRMA and also with Jennifer's firm as well. But IRMA is the one who deal with all the harassment and discrimination cases, which would drive Jim probably crazy if he had to deal with all of the ones we have. But they are a great resource. We do have annual board meetings that we go to, and we get a lot of information about what's going on at other agencies and how those are handled. So it's really a really good agency to be connected to.
So over the 16 years that we've been involved with IRMA, we've only had 16 complaints. And I think that is amazing for an agency of our size and capacity for over that 16-year period of time. And a lot of them we've been able to resolve very amicably with the staff and develop a real solid relationship with the staff and with HR and with the executive staff.
Any questions? Yeah. Yeah, we're going to have PowerPoint next time.
That was great.
Any questions?
I was just going to make a motion to approve. Thank you.
I just wanted to ask one question, just because I thought it was interesting.
Yeah, give us one question at least.
So, being a member of this organization, you were talking about getting a rebate. Does that mean that members of the organization, if an individual member of the organization makes less use than average or whatever of the organization, they get the rebate, or is it a community rebate?
It's distributed among the different members, and it's based on how your
so it's
claims
a community,
are handled.
So it's like a community rebate. You
right, mean, right.
In other
like
words,
if
there's excess money at the end of the year, everybody
they
gets
distribute
a
it
proportional
to all
payout.
Exactly.
Okay, good. That's all I wanted to know. Thank you. Very good.
In
that's
that
an interesting
respect,
point.
Is IRMA a national organization or local, regional?
It's California, isn't it?
Yeah, it's
California.
Just California.
And they have like almost all the cities, City of Walnut Creek, Antioch, Contra Costa, Housing Authority, other housing authorities are part of it. They have a really big pool, and they have a lot of pools. What's that, joint power participants, too. We are our individual. Cool. And then they have some groups that's a joint power. They have like several cities in one group, but we're an individual plan.
And when we were in CHRMA,
we was a
CHRMA contracted with IRMA. Mm-hmm. So when CHRMA dissolved, we just kept our relationship with IRMA because they did the substantial amount of guarantee.
Right. Yeah, we're one of only two
coverage
agencies that's individual, Oakland Housing Authority and Contra Costa County Housing Authority.
And IRMA allowed us to continue as individual members because our ratio of complaints was so low. There were other people who were in CHRMA who were not able to continue their relationship because they had high dollar amount claims. But because we didn't have a lot and we didn't have high dollar amount claims, they allowed us to continue our
which gets to your question about being very careful who you let in the door if you're going to divide the dividends that way.
I see. So this isn't just open to anybody.
Right. No. You have to go through a whole process to become a member.
Mm-hmm. You have to demonstrate that you are able to manage your internal affairs competently.
And IRMA is very rigid on making sure we have that we make sure all our supervisors get the 1825 training, because first time we get as soon as we get a request a complaint from any individual, the first thing they want to ask is they had the training. And that's one of the main things. And they can deny our claim if that employee has not been trained, which means we pay the first $50,000 on any claim. IRMA pays any amount over the $50,000. So they have the right to deny a claim if we're not in compliance. So they're rigid and, you know, they're serious.
You do have to go through an application process. And when you go through the application process, they look at 5 years' history on your agency. And depending on the level of claims, the dollar amounts that are paid out, you can be denied access to get into the IRMA pool. But if you're like OHA in good standing, then it's easy to get in. And the board will vote to put you in.
Very good.
Did we take your breath away?
Do you need some water?
Give that man some water.
I
have water. Okay. I drank it down the wrong.
Oh.
So I'm not sure more water will help. But we'll see.
I'll move the item.
It was moved by... So you're
by
second?
Janie.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was
item.
Moved. I'll second. Yeah.
Thank you, Commissioners.
Item has been moved and seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, abstentions, carries unanimously. My, we are an agreeable commission.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you.
Okay. So and now we have completed item F. So I believe we now move on to item 7, written communications.
In written communications, we just have our usual monthly report and also the scheduled meetings, and where staff is available if you have any questions. I have also added to your desks tonight, and I will email this out later this week or before the actual event, National Night Out. Commissioners often want to know the sites. It's on this map. It's also on an interactive map that we have. So I will email this so you can just click if you want to check. Remember, the senior sites on the list start earlier in the afternoon and then later for the family sites, but I thought some people would like to just have it printed to the map. And I want to thank Mark Schifferl and Omar, particularly in terms of site intervention, and our police department and property management department, who get very involved and active in creating these local gatherings for National Night Out, particularly the one at Peralta, which is always, I think, the best and largest around.
Don't let the others hear you say.
But that's true. But they get a street closure, and they get
work so hard.
A few other add-ons from the police department, but I'm very grateful that we do this every year. And that's all my written communications. If we have any questions, otherwise we'll move on to announcements.
Well, wait, I actually do have a couple questions.
Okay.
Here. One of them I think I might know the answer to, but I just don't remember. So looking at annual inspections in leased housing, I just noticed that there's a large gap between the number of inspections performed and the numbers of inspections passed. Now, is the high failure rate there due to just like a burned out light bulb or something like that?
Are you, if you can, I'm curious
oh, that's
which
under leased housing department. I don't see a page number on here.
Okay.
But it's owner services. It's under owner
services. No, leased housing is what we wanted to know because there's under the other ones.
It was where we had. Last month, there were 600 and change inspections, and then we had 248 passed. This month, it was 800 and change done, and 300 passed, more or less.
Or failed?
So I was just curious why there was such a high failure rate. And I have a feeling I've asked this question before and forgot the answer to it.
Michelle Hassan, Director of Leased Housing. It really just depends on the unit that we go into. You know, in terms of HQS, one item would fail the entire unit. So it could be a smoke detector, it could be a window, a lock. So in this instance, there were just more units that that failed, owner and tenant fails. We had a lot of reschedule, vacant or canceled. You can see there's four times more in terms of those units, and then the no-show rate tends to be fairly consistent.
So now, when a unit fails, do we have to send an inspector back out to that unit a second time?
In most cases, we do. We do have a verification protocol where the owner can provide verification of the repair as long as it's not an emergency. fail, or for instance, if the water is not working, electricity is not on, we do have to go out for that. But owners can provide written verification of the fail item, which is a self-certification that we offer. But generally, I would say 80% of those inspections, we do go back for the callback to confirm that the repairs have been done.
Yeah, I see. So that there's actually some cost associated with that. Mm-hmm. Then.
Yes.
So now, is there any bill back to the landlord for a failed inspection?
No, not at this time. What happens if the owner fails on the second inspection, they go into an abatement process. And so what will end up happening if they don't repair at the second callback, the housing authority will hold, will abate the until such time the pass happens. The owner will have 30 days and then the contract's canceled.
And some of the fails, though, are caused by tenants, not by owners.
Oh. Some of them are caused by tenants.
Yes. Yeah. So tenants are assigned fail items as well. So, for instance, I can give you an example, a hole in a door. You go out the next year and you find that the door has now a foot through the fail. The fail will be assigned to the tenant. The owner can repair the fail for the tenant and charge the tenant for that repair.
Right.
They can negotiate that, but that fail will be assigned to the tenant. For repair.
Yeah, okay, I see. You know, I would actually just be curious to find out, you know, I'm just curious now what the cost, because whenever you have a human show up to do anything, I mean, make a house call, that's quite a bit of money. I mean, because most appliance people, for example, will charge you $80 or $100 just to show up at the door. I mean,
so
that's before they do anything. So I'm just curious.
And because we contract it, we can give you the cost.
Right. I believe for a callback is.
I'm just curious as to what.
I'll confirm. What? Yeah. $19.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
Well, the first inspection is 20 something, and the callback is less than that. So for the inspector to go out.
We're only billed $20.
That's correct.
For an inspection?
Yeah.
That's correct.
We're doing something right. Holy catfish.
They do a lot of them, right?
Yes, they do.
Yeah,
they do
all very
of
quickly.
Our annual.
Yeah, but they have to go from one place to the other.
They're very good at
sure.
it.
Sure. There's
but we'll email the exact
sure.
amount. And we're actually, and one of on my announcements we'll talk about, talked about today on the conference call as well. Yeah.
Okay, well, good. Well,
and they're risk-based,
yeah,
you know.
I mean, I just looked at this, and I just said, gee, people are driving around doing this.
But I think part of the other thing that you didn't mention is when you do inspections, and you do risk-based inspections, and you're focusing on those property owners that have failed rather than those that always pass, then you get a higher fail rate just because the people who always pass every time are not getting inspected every year. They're going to an alternate inspection schedule because they passed every time. So you're focusing our inspection resources and the costs onto those units and those landlords that are have more issues and fail more often. So
right, so we have a way of targeting what we do.
Yeah, so we're targeting our inspectors in the first place, the 809, toward those units that have not routinely passed. So they've been our problem units anyway.
So see, but this makes it even more interesting because now we can ask the question of what are these people that aren't really getting the job done properly costing us?
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds like it's not as much as I thought. So, but it still would be interesting to know what it is. And then I just had one other question, which was, well, what's cooking with the Lockwood Gardens work orders?
Oh, I mean, they were doing a UPCS, so they generate work orders to correct.
Oh.
All right. That's the inspection protocol. They go through every unit, generate a zillion work orders.
I was like, boy,
and so whenever you see
there?
A huge jump on one of our large sites, it's because they're getting ready for a REAC inspection or a UPS has gone through.
Oh,
and,
okay.
And we go through the UPCS is someone we pay to go through and generate work orders for all the units so we can correct them before a REAC.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you. That's it. Oh, Commissioner Castillo has some comments and questions.
Thank you. So I was curious concerning the Jobs Plus program. Has the new Uber folks reached out to us in any way, or have we reached out to them?
We have not. They're not here yet, so I don't know who to reach out to, but no.
Okay. I was just curious.
Okay.
Under the home ownership piece, I'm so glad to see, and I believe this is correct if I'm stating, that we are also helping homeowners post post the sale of the buying of their home to refinance their mortgages, because I think that's a really important service that we're giving our homeowners. So am I correct to assume that we actually assist our homeowners through that process? Because it really is important.
Lenita Wheeler is going to come answer the question.
Hi, Lenita Wheeler again, Family and Community Partnerships Director. Yes, we are specifically supporting our homeowners who have been in the program 7 years or more, because we know that the subsidy is not permanent, and we're looking to support them with ensuring that they will be able to afford the home and all of their expenses on their own once the subsidy is over. And so we are taking advantage of this current term time where the rates are very low. Many of our homeowners purchased with rates 5%, 6% interest. And we have been supporting them with reducing those rates. It is saving them in their total tenant payment. It also saves the housing authority in its HAP payment. And one of the larger benefits to supporting our families through this is many purchase with layered financing. They'll have a silent second or first-time home buyers assistance program. And this is allowing them to convert two or three multiple home loans with various lenders and different paperwork that is sometimes confusing to them into just one home loan, a simple, easy, one individual to pay. And again, we do offer post-purchase workshops to support our families with a number of things so they can be ready when the subsidy ends.
I want to bear witness to the difficulties that can happen in refinancing a home. I did this last year, and I'm telling you, I had to go through so many hoops. And the documentation is just as bad as buying the first home. So I really respect that you are continuing to offer this service to the homeowners, because it's really serious. And I'm just holding that up to let you know that I noticed. And thank you so much.
Thank you.
The other thing is I'm always excited to see special needs housing continue to invite our Shelter Plus Care tenants into our RAP TRA program. It looks like we have 32 households have passed eligibility, and 18 have attended the ACV briefing, and that's just really good news. Continues to move me. Thank you very much. Lastly, I believe this is a service provider question. First of all, Prosperity Place waiting list opened.
Yes, it is.
Yes! And I was curious, in my documentation, there are 8 units specifically for special needs residents. And I was hoping, is that a separate application process, or how do we identify our folks for those units? If I could, and this is my final question. Thank you so much for your patience, Commissioner.
Yeah, I'm not sure. We'd have to check with ABALSI about how they're screening the...
Oh, it would be ABALSI.
Yeah, it's not us opening it.
Okay.
But we can check and I can email you.
No, I can call them
tomorrow.
I was just curious. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much.
All right, moving on to... Wait, one back. We got my comments. So I have comments. I like to warn you, some days I don't, but I have a few today. So one I already mentioned, which is National Night Out, and really thanks to the site intervention team and Omar, to Family and Community Partnerships, OHAPD, and Property Operations, who combine, create a number of sites across the city, get out there and visit and build neighborhoods and communities. And we'll get you the list. If you can stop by, great, but otherwise stop by the one in your neighborhood and say hello. Other comments are speaking of inspections, we are discussing with HUD and participating in something called the UPCSV inspection system, which is changing from HQS to Uniform Physical Construction Standards, I think is what it stands for, voucher system. It was a little shocking hearing their conference call today, but we've been in contact with them. They were going to come out in a couple weeks, but they're not. Apparently, their travel budget wasn't approved, so they'll be out. But we wanted to be in part of the demonstration and involved because we want to help influence things that don't work before they unilaterally implement a new inspection protocol. Our hope is that this is being done in earnest with HUD to make it simpler and better for landlords and tenants and less onerous. Little things like the tenant doesn't have to be present. Big things like what they cite for in terms of 3 feet or 2 feet of peeling paint and things that make landlords crazy, because we need to have a middle ground. And so this HUD has been heavily criticized based on HQS for years, and this is their solution. They put out a notice asking what housing authorities would be willing to help demonstrate and participate in study. We replied we would, because we actually want to influence the change of it so it makes sense, because oftentimes when they release things, it doesn't. So we may be participating directly, or they'll be out at different stages for that. We were enormously disappointed that they had no hearing sessions at all scheduled for California. The largest number of vouchers in the country are in the state of California. We were also disappointed that we hear we were the only one, and then we heard maybe LA was trying to participate as well, but then their travel budget is keeping them in the East Coast, which is predominantly public housing and not Section 8, and I just think they need to get a real picture and come out where the issues are. This is the state and the area that's been making the most noise about it. Why aren't you out here talking to us and working with us to find a different protocol? But we're involved, and we'll keep you updated. I wanted to also let you know that two RFQs have hit the streets for project-based Section 8 for existing units and for an operating local MTW program operating agreement for SROs. We'll be having the bidders conference, I believe, Thursday morning, and then we will get written responses to that, and we have the closing dates in the RFP. But I'm still very excited about this, and I'm hoping we get some real innovative proposals, and I think we're going to get quite a few of them from what I hear. There's going to be a number of agencies coming forward. We are also, just to give you a heads up, we are planning to have a visit from Principal Assistant Secretary of HUD, Lourdes Castro Ramirez, later in August. It may be up to a two-day visit, and so there will be some time, and I'll get those out to you as soon as we get some confirmation. We're designing a day, and she would like to come out. It's going to be a day of conversation about a number of issues, from health and displacement, and I'm putting it together throughout a tour, and I hope that she wants to participate in all or some of it. But I wanted to make it, because it's who we are, I wanted to make it a very real and powerful conversation like she can't have in other parts of the country about some of the issues that our folks are facing, including place-based initiatives, I might add. We also have another announcement that I want to make, is that we have received the GFOA Certificate of Achievement for Excellence in Financial Reporting for the third year in a row. So we'll be adding the next little brass plaque to the third year in a row. I really want to thank all the folks who worked on it, Tracy Stabler and all the finance department. Please send my gratitude. But it takes more than that. It also takes Greer putting it together for everyone. It takes Dominica with the data. It takes all the operating departments maintaining the data for the year to produce something that is clear, understandable, and has all of the required financial information as well. We've also been awarded a new FSS grant this year, and I want to congratulate Family and Community Partnerships for working along with Dominica for getting it in and getting the grant done. The other thing we got just recently is an award for Family Unification Program FSS grant. This one we went after, and I want to thank the county for supporting us in it. It's taking our 10 youth FUP, Family Unification Program participants, and putting them into FSS, which is a five-year program. What we got out of it is we get 5 years rather than 18 months for the youth who are involved in FUP. That's why we were very aggressive about wanting to get it, because the program is designed now where you only get 18 months, and that is not enough time for our youth in that program. So now we have 5 years, and we also get to marry them into our Family Self-Sufficiency Program. So I'm excited about getting that kicked off. I think we're going to kick it off in January of 2017, but we'll let HUD know in the next little bit. But I'm really happy we got that award, and thankful for Family and Community Partnerships for putting it all together. The other announcement is the AIA, the American Institute of Architects, has awarded our Lakeside Senior the HUD Secretary Award for the best affordable housing design in the country this year.
Wow!
So it was... It's a big deal. I mean, he does one a year, and we got it. And he awarded it not not just because. It was David Baker designed it, and he's always done interesting work. He did Tessa Faranga. Nothing looks normal. Some people don't like it. Some of my neighbors don't like it. They like it's too. But I would tell you, when you go in that building, it is beautiful. It is unbelievably gracious space. But beyond that, he awarded it because of our programming. We have 43 vouchers that are targeting formerly homeless seniors with services integrated into the property. And I think that was why we won it. It could have been the amazing view off the top community room, but I think it was also the seniors. I'm very proud of that project. I want to thank everyone in development. I want to thank the Leased Housing Department. All of you did exemplary work in getting that done. I also wanted just to make note that on Monday, July 18th, as you know, several of our police officers were caught on camera playing basketball. I'm considering the level of discipline. And we'll get back to you. No, it was a terrific example of how we do community policing. It's really just an honor to us all that we can show the world how you should be policing our youth and our communities. And it was covered by KTVU because of a video that one of the kids shot and posted. And it got over 6,000 hits very quickly, and so they contacted our Chief Duplessis and wanted to do a story. And as you know, I usually don't like doing stories, but because of what's going on in the world, I think any time we can do a story of showing something that is effective and that is represents the kind of care and love that we want to bring to our cities and to our communities and to each other, that we should put that out there. So we participated, and thank you, Chief, and your officers. I'm very proud of you all for what you do every day. And the story was a good piece to put out into the world. Not only for Oakland's sake, but just for police officers and policing in America. And those are my comments. Thank you all.
Thank you. And yes, it is really inspiring to have some good news.
Yeah.
I mean, especially with the news we've been seeing. That's really cool. Okay, so now we are going on to reports of commission committees. Did we have any? I don't think we have any.
We haven't.
Did we?
No,
there were none. So we now have announcements by commissioners.
Did you want to talk about the city council meeting tomorrow? Okay.
Wow. Well, it's been a quiet
same as last time.
It's the depth of summer. Isn't it great?
It is great. It is wonderful.
Long days.
So now we come to item 11, which is adjournment. Do we have a motion?
I will make that motion.
Very good.
I second.
It's been moved. It's been seconded. We are hereby adjourned. May you all have a wonderful evening, and thank you for the wonderful work and a
great
meeting.
Thank you, Commissioners.